I want to take just a little step back because I know it's been in the news, but just in terms of you guys are holed up in a hotel for the most part, you're still in your pods. Yes, and a race going off flawlessly today. So feeling still pretty good with the way things are set up, with your own internal kind of sequestering and social distancing and testing and what FIS has on offer?
Yeah, we are definitely just given the changes and new stresses of this year, I won't say things are perfectly smooth and easy, but the team is really doing great. There are a lot of things to organize on a daily basis. Not just from a staff perspective, but the athletes have multiple surveys they need to fill out, a wellness survey for FIS and for the U.S. ski team. We've had two tests since we've been in Switzerland, one immediately before departing for Switzerland as well. And there's just some, you know, a test gets lost. So JC has to have kind of an emergency rapid antigen test right before official training yesterday. And so all these little things, they're not really a big deal at all, unless you are kind of tense about things. And if there's one thing this team has done really well this week in Davos, it's sort of just go with the flow. Because we're all doing this for the first time. And we don't know if the scanners at the little checkpoints for these little zones that they have set up today are going to work, or if they're going to bottleneck or what. And people were just good about showing up a little bit early in case there was extra traffic because COVID is causing things to take a little bit longer.
Sure. But when you say scanner, are you talking like, you know, they scan your credential to get in, or is this like your temperature scan kind of thing to quick temperature to read on your forehead?
No, it's, there's a QR code on your credential, which everyone has to wear right up until they actually race. And that lets the OC or that particular scanner know that you have filled out your symptom check for the FIS. And it also lets them know that you've had a negative COVID test result in the last 72 hours. So it just sort of creates a secure environment and one that we can all trust. And the OC today did a great job. Each team had our own, 5x5 meter box so that we were remain in our own pod. It's just a lot of COVID conscious measures that are being taken here in Switzerland. So we feel really safe about things.
Let's start with like the big news on the day is obviously, you know, Rosie Brennan, her first World Cup victory and in a sprint. Maybe that speaks for itself, but I want you to speak on that.
Yeah, sure. Well, not only was it a win, but she won from start to finish. She posted the fastest qualifier by a second and three quarters over Sophie, and Sophie was charging full gas. And so it was just a real, very impressive accomplishment. And I think probably even Rosie was a little uncertain about how she was going to navigate, you know, sometimes slower starts and a course that continually curves because it's just a loop. You know, how is she going to get by? Because she felt good, but there are two components to sprinting. One is feeling good and being in shape, and the other is being able to execute tactics. And Rosie also executed some incredible tactics today, better than I've ever seen her do. She, to get out of the semis, she started a little bit slower, not intentionally, but just ended up kind of near the back, but had chosen a lane over near the left side that on a course that bends slightly to the right, and there just isn't traffic over on the left. And it causes one to burn a couple matches to use this tactic, but she ended up at the corner on the outside, instead of sixth, in kind of 3-4, and put her in position to ski how she wanted to ski up the hill. And then all of a sudden she's in the race. And so instead what Rosie has done in the past when she's made the heats is just sort of, even when she's feeling great, you know, she wants to go by, but she can't find the window. And today she was just making moves. So that was a huge accomplishment. And, you know, I know people will talk about the three Scandinavian nations not being here, but, you still had Lampich, you had Nepraeva, you had Caldwell. Really, the big difference was not that Sweden and Norway and Finland weren't there. It was that Rosie has really improved. And I think it just happened to coincide with those three nations pulling out, because she was going to be hard to beat by anyone today. I'm not saying people won't be able to do it in the future, but what she did today was not because Scandinavia wasn't here.
The other thing I'd like you to, you know, talk about, think about, do you feel like there were any missed opportunities for, and let's just continue along with the U.S. side. You know, there's qualifying, you know, people are qualifying, and it should go noted that Hannah Halvorsen qualified in 38th, you know, a year out back from a devastating injury, which, you know, frankly, if there were no news coming out of Davos today for the U.S., that's great news. And I don't want to obviously bury that, but that is great news. But yeah, can you speak a little bit about if you might see this as missed opportunities for the U.S. to really, you know, pack the top five, pack the top 10?
Yeah, I think it was, you know, it's an incredible day anytime you get a victory. So, but it does sort of disguise that we had some disappointing results out there today, or not disappointing, but that weren't quite what they could have been. But I do first want to say that watching Hannah was one of the highlights of the day. She came by on her second lap, and Jesse's on the spin bike, and Kate Johnson, our development coach, and I are standing along the fence, and Hannah just comes by breathing super loud with a huge smile on her face, and not giving away any time at all, but the three of us just teared up like instantly. It was so cool to see her back racing, you know, and it just that moment sort of represented the journey she's been on for the last year, recovering from her accident. So that was a huge highlight of the day. There were a couple things with we had just going into the fifth quarterfinal. We had Kevin and Simi in the first and second lucky loser spot, and they got knocked out by the fifth heat, which is unusual. But the fifth heat went particularly fast today, and so we missed out there. And I think we took a strategy in heat selection that sort of went for the big result when maybe we're not quite there yet physically. And that is to say that Kevin went for heat number one and Simi went for heat number two. And, you know, we've talked about it a little bit. We're not firing on all cylinders just yet. And so maybe we were a little bit outmatched. Maybe they just got outskied in that particular heat and it was the right move. I tend to be of the sort that doesn't like to shy away from the first or second heat that has Pellegrino and Bolshinov in it. I like to go for the first semifinal because you have more recovery before the final. You have a better chance of being on the podium in the final. But with that comes a higher chance of getting knocked out in the quarters, and that's what happened today.
Yeah, does that, because I know you guys crunch those numbers quite a bit in terms of how, you know, what heat you choose. And for obvious reasons, like we were talking about, you know, the speed of the heat itself, but also recovery time. Does that data, you know, differ when applied to the women than the men? I mean, and again, I'm not necessarily, I mean, you have the data, I don't, right? Do you tend to always apply that to both, you know, the men's field and the women's field, that strategy, historically, I guess?
I would say it's applied somewhat evenly. At the end of the day, really, it's occasionally an athlete will ask you, you know, where do I go? And we'll have a plan ready for them. But if you're feeling great, you can win the race out of any heat against anyone. And that's important to remember. It's not about picking the magic heat that has the magic avenues to the podium. But we definitely often select a fast heat for Sophie. And I think Simi and Kevin are good candidates for that because they're very efficient. They're tactically sound. They can draft. They can be there and in the end, in the top three or four, in a heat that is going really fast. So I'm not particularly bummed about those guys getting knocked out in the quarters because of the approach we took. I am pretty sure that they could have made it into the semis in a couple other heats, but it would have likely put them in the second semifinal and less of a chance of big success. And Semi's been in the final here in Davos, and you know, you're looking to have all-time best results anytime you toe the line. So that's what we went for, and I don't really regret it. But your question is a good one. There were ways to get into the top 10 today that probably could have happened that we didn't go for.
And it's also easy to look back because we're looking back on the race, right? I mean, different real-time situation. I totally get that.
Big time. Yeah, you select a heat and maybe it populates with fast skiers after you've selected, and you have no control over that. So a lot of this is sometimes hindsight, but.
Okay, curious for any insight, any comments on ski speed and waxing today. I mean, clearly, for example, you know, Rosie's on a ripping pair of skis, and not looking at anyone in particular, but I'm curious, you know, holistically, do you feel like ski speed was representative, nation to nation, and like the U.S. skis would have held up or did hold up across the board?
Yeah, I think we had good skis today. And we talked about that in our meeting, our debrief meeting with the techs and coaches at the end of the day. And we just sort of canvassed the athletes throughout the day, and you get an idea of how we're doing as a team. And we have had days in Davos where you can see our skis outrunning other teams. And that wasn't happening today, but I think we had as fast of skis as anybody. Nobody was really getting away with anything today. I didn't see anyways. It was a fair day. And, we went 1-2 in qualification for women. JC was fifth. I mean, you got to be on good boards to do that.
Sure. Okay, last question, I think, and I'm just curious because I talked about it this morning with someone, just about what happens in the field of play. And again, to qualify, this is a skate race. It's not classic. Some people would argue that classic days are more complicated when it comes to waxing, but you know, you guys are the pros. So I'm sure skate waxing becomes complicated as well. So that said, you know, we often think of Norway as being kind of the game changer with all of their resources and institutional knowledge with waxing. You know, they can come into so many different venues and have lots of different places to start and then problem solve from those starting places, if that makes sense. Yeah, I'm just curious, like, does that change the game at all when you know that, you know, you know, Norway and all their waxing resources are not there, and does it maybe create more of an even playing field when it comes to the tech side of things?
Yeah, it's a good question and an interesting one, because there was a proposal by Great Britain in the captain's meeting last night to not allow staff bibs in the glide out track. So that would limit each team to only 4 bibs in the glide out track. And it was interesting, and I was joking around a little bit with one of the Great Britain coaches today, Hans, because this is their first weekend without Norway, who they partner with for waxing. And we heard that proposal, and the FIS accepted it, and we're like, hold on a second. You know, we have 8 techs here. And so we counter-proposed, and that we are allowed to have extra bibs in the area. And so there was a little bit of a battle last night, and ultimately we had every nation vote for usage of more bibs, which would allow more personnel gliding skis, versus less, which is what Great Britain was advocating for.